Let's pray. Father in heaven, I want to ask now tonight that you would bless this meeting and bless me especially as I try to share some thoughts tonight that have been helpful to me to know and will surely be helpful to your people as they live by them. I pray that you would help me not to say anything that is not true, and I pray that you would bring our understanding into subjection to the will of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen. If there's anybody in this room who does not want to be successful, would you let me know why you don't? I'm going to assume that everybody on earth wants to be successful. Though we may have very differing opinions about what success is. To some people, success means that you become a multimillionaire before you die. To some people, it maybe just means that you have a very good job with a good retirement, a good wife, a good family, good grandkids. It is possible that success to some may mean having a house, a small pellet business, and a cat to pet. I doubt that Dan personally thinks that is success in life, but some people might say that was success. We all want to be successful, though we don't all have the same opinions about what success are or is. It is, to plain and simple, success means to accomplish the goal that you set out to accomplish. So if you set out on the goal to accomplish being rich, and you don't get rich in life, you weren't successful with your goal. Now, it may be that you may actually have been more successful in the things that matter if you didn't accomplish your goal in that situation. It may be. But it's beside the point. Your goal was to be rich. And if you didn't get rich, you didn't accomplish your goal. What I would like to bring out tonight is the basic of what I believe success consists of for a Christian. What we should be looking for. What we should be calling success. And some principles on what to do to get there, and some principles on what not to do to get there. And let's go to Ecclesiastes chapter 11. And we'll read verses 1 through 6. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Give a portion to seven and also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the cloud shall not reap. As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. In the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand, for thou knowest not whether shall prosper either this or that, or whether they both shall be alike good. As we go to the first verse of this chapter, it says, cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Probably most all of you at one time or another have been standing on a beach, on a lake, and you have picked up a stick, and you have thrown it out as far as you could throw it, and you have watched it come back to shore. All right? Now, I think that's the idea here that Solomon is talking about. Things that are put out on the water eventually make it back to shore. But of course, he didn't mean that we should go dropping our bread in the water. That wasn't what he was talking about. He's giving a principle for life here about the fact that when we do a certain thing with our bread, it comes back to us. And basically, the rest of the verses detail what I believe is a recipe for success. In order to catch some more information that I think goes very well with this passage, let's look at another thing Solomon said in Proverbs chapter 11. In verse 24, he says, "There is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it." There is a certain principle that is number one principle for success. If you're talking about things on this earth, if you're talking about the way that the physical things of life work, if you want to talk about business, you can put business into that category. If you want to talk about farming, you can put farming into that category. If you want to talk about friendship, you can put friendship into that category. If you want anything you want to talk about, there's the way things work on this earth. There's a certain principle that we all know, but very few of us ever understand it to its depth enough to get into the center of the flow of it to actually make it work for us. That principle is simply this: you never get more out of something than you put into it. If you, and actually that, I'm sorry, because that statement, though it is true, it actually doesn't go far enough in describing what these passages are talking about. Because in essence, these passages are talking about a little bit more than just getting back out of something what you put into it. It's actually talking about an increase in life. Finding a way to take what you have and become better, to go further, to get more. And it's basically the same principle that Jesus lays out in the New Testament. If you give, rather, and it shall be given to you. But it's not just given to you. It's pressed down, it's shaken together, it's running over. It's a way to increase. I have preached many, many times, if anybody is poor and you feel like you're lacking money, try giving some of what you have left away. It's a good policy that if you feel like you can't make ends meet and nothing is working out well for you, take some of the scrapings of what you have and make Elijah a cake first, okay? Because thus saith the Lord, the barrel of meal shall not waste, the cruse of oil shall not fail until the day that the Lord sends rain upon the earth. That was the word to the widow who was commanded to make Elijah a cake first. Or was that Elisha? Sorry, I can't remember. Can anybody here remember which one that was? It doesn't really matter. They were brothers anyway. Almost. The idea is, as Solomon says here, there is that scattereth and yet increaseth. How do the two of those two ideas go together? When you take and get rid of the things you have, you throw out the things you have, you give away the things you have, you're constantly scattering your own possessions. How does that lead to increase? Of course, we know very well that the subject that is in these verses here is growing food. And you go to your barn and you look at the stock of grain that you have in the barn and you say, I know I go through so much grain a day for my family and what I have here is not enough to last me very long. I am not going to plant as much this spring as I ordinarily would plant because my stock is too low. What's going to happen to you? Well, you're going to be in a bigger pickle next winter because you didn't plant enough. Now for next winter, you're going to exhaust your stock and you're going to have nothing to plant. You're going to eat up everything that you had saved. And the next spring, you are not only going to be out of food, you're going to be out of stock. And it says, there is that withholdeth more than is meat, but it tendeth to poverty. And there's lots and lots of times that we look on life, and we always look on life with these glasses of unbelief. Unbelief in the way that God said things work. And so we're always looking at not enough, not enough, not enough. If I do this, I don't have enough to take care of myself. If I do this, I don't have enough to take care of myself. If I do this, I'm going to get in trouble. I need to save something for myself now. I need to cut back a little bit. Let's try to just whittle down a little bit of what we're investing into the business. And maybe God will even be happy with us if we just don't go over our 10% that we think maybe we should be giving at church. If we just figure that to the penny and drop just the correct amount in the offering and let's make sure that we don't get too overboard here with this idea of getting rid of our stuff because there isn't going to be enough. And God says very simply it tends to poverty. And somebody else, he says, well, there'll be plenty. He has a, the guy who thinks in the plenty mode is not looking at what he has right now. He's looking rather at what he's going to do or what he is going to get. Because the next verse says, the liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. I remember the story of a guy who watered, and he got a wife out of it. You remember Jacob standing at the well. He says, I'm drawing water for these sheep. I remember the story of a girl who watered, and she got a husband out of it. You do not give of yourself, unselfishly give of yourself away to the needs of humanity without getting blessing in return for it. You don't. It's a principle of God. It works that way. So when you're looking at your stock, let me give you a piece of advice that I think is very helpful, especially if you ever feel like perhaps what you have in life is a little bit shy of what you need. When you're looking at your stock of what you have, don't take stock. Forget it. It doesn't matter. Now, that's an attitude, okay? It's not necessarily an actual fact. Because if you have a certain amount of money in the bank and you've got a certain amount of bills, it's probably a very good idea to know that you are taking care of your bills and not spending money on ice cream cones for your wife when you are the next day going to have to write a check to your landlord for rent and their money and the money isn't going to be there because you wasted it. Okay? That is a good idea. It's a good idea to make sure you are not being foolish. But when it comes to an attitude about how we are protecting ourselves, how we are living for ourselves, don't take stock of it. Forget it. It doesn't matter what's there. Just look at other people's needs. Just open your eyes to what is around you. And the day will come where the harvest for what you did starts returning to you. And you know, the thing about it is, I'm talking about this right at the moment, kind of in a sense of the physical, the earth, the way the earth works. But you throw God into the picture, and God tells you to do something with your life, and you do it, and the hand, the mighty hand that He has to make your life work for you, the principle gets changed completely overnight. But right now, the principle as it is laid out in Proverbs chapter 11 and in Ecclesiastes chapter 11 doesn't really bring that into focus. We're talking about how things work on this earth. Verse 26 of Proverbs 11 says, "He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it." We'll get into that idea later. There is an attitude that some people get about the value of things. Be careful that you don't overvalue things, because you can go to the farmer's market and you can say, "My corn is worth so much money. My turnips are worth so much money. My tomatoes are worth so much money." And you can put your prices at the price that you believe that those items are worth. And if the people look at that price as too much money, they will go away without your stuff. And what did you earn that day? You wasted a day in the sun, and you got to take home some produce that you cannot possibly eat. It's too much for you to eat. And you're going to let it sit on your counter and rot because you refused to sell it for what the people would pay for it. Very, very, very good principle to take to business with you. A thing is valued at what you can make sales for it at. It is not valued at what it costs to produce. It is not valued at what you put into it. It is valued at what you can sell it for. And some people very much fear loss. Quit. Don't fear loss. There's never any reason to fear loss. Well, let's look back now at Ecclesiastes chapter 11, and let's go through this verse by verse and look at the meaning of some of the things that Solomon is talking about. What is the recipe here that is success? So first of all, we already covered verse 1, "Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days." I believe this verse means nothing other than being the liberal soul that Proverbs chapter 11 was talking about. The person who does it is not hoardy. The person who isn't greedy. The person who is not looking at saving their bread on their shelf or saving their wheat in their barn or holding on to the things they have. It's the person who lets go. Lets their stuff go. Gives it out when somebody else needs it. Gets rid of it here, there, and everywhere. It's coming back to you. So verse 2, he says, "Give a portion to 7 and also to 8, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth." Most people that are smarter than me, I didn't do this, but most people, if they are going to open up a business, probably take some sort of a business plan. So you decide, this is my business plan, 7, right? I need 7 clients to run this business successfully. And Solomon says, if that's your business plan, take 8, because you don't know what evil is coming. And one of your 7 ideas is going to fail. If you run a business and only one of your 7 ideas fails and you had an eighth in place, you are successful. All right? There are lots and lots of businesses out there that are running with a failure of 6 to 7 and they don't have an eighth to back them up. Golden Harvest did that for a few years. All right, verse 3 says, if the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. If the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. All right, we've got a problem here. Solomon tells us in this verse that we are not in control of what happens in our lives. Whether or not what we do is successful or not is beyond our ability to control it. Other outside forces work on what we are doing and determine whether or not what we do will work or won't work. So, you're a farmer? Are there clouds in your sky? Guess what? If those clouds have rain in them, your crop's going to get watered. If they don't, it's not. It's that simple. There isn't anything you can do about it. If the clouds go overhead and they don't drop anything on your field didn't get watered. If a tree falls, you say, well, for whatever reason, let's say I plant my field here next to a tree, and the tree is going to fall. Now, my field is going to be to the north of the tree. If the tree falls toward the north, it's on my field, all right? That's where it fell. If it falls toward the south, it's not on my field. It doesn't matter. It makes absolutely no difference. What do you want at this moment? The tree fell where it fell, all right? It fell. Some people get so uptight and wrapped up and out of control when something bad happens to them. But the fact of the matter is, it happened. What are you going to do about it? One time I decided I was looking for property. I don't know why I was looking for property. I just thought it was a good thing to buy, okay? And so I was looking at the back taxes list, see what was available. And so this one piece of property I thought was a nice little piece of property, about 6 acres, just outside the edge of town, and the minimum bid on it is $3,000. And I said, that's a good price for property. I'm going to buy this, and if I end up not using it, I'll just resell it and make some money off it. Okay, that's the plan now. All right, so I buy the property. I put in my bid. I win the bid. I get the property. And a little while later, we decide we're going to look into building a store on the property. All right? Well, neighbor across the street is furious. He's furious. And he has no problem telling me. He is going to do everything in his power to fight me. He is not letting us build a store on that piece of property. So, now we could get irritated at this moment that if the neighbor to the north is grumpy, in the place where the neighbor is grumpy, he is grumpy. We could get irritated about this, but it's a fact now. We have a grumpy neighbor, all right? We can't change it. There isn't anything we can do about it. We have a grumpy neighbor. So after discussing the issue for a week or two, we decide, no, not worth it. I have no interest in getting into a huge fight over this. So we went and told the neighbor, yeah, if you don't want a store here, we're not going to do it. And we offered him the property. He was sort of interested in buying it. He had told us before, but he didn't want it right then. So I listed it with a realtor. I listed it for about $6,000, something like that. Well, it was for sale for a couple of years. And we had one offer on the property for about $5,000 and something. And It was contingent on the fact that the property would perk for a septic system, which it wouldn't. Nobody knew at the moment when the offer was made, but I accepted the offer, and they backed out because the property didn't perk. It was kind of a little bit low land, not the nicest piece of property in the world. That's why I went to back taxes, you know. So anyway, meanwhile, we've started the store. We're running a business now, and we need money desperately. And I'm working construction for a guy who has bought and sold a lot of property in his life, and in fact, his family, his father, started the business, and he was the son and had taken over when his father retired. Together, they had developed a very huge area west of town and had built many, 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 many houses there before they were sold. They just built spec houses. Developed this property, divided it into lots, they build a house, they put it on the market, they sell it. Build another house, put it on the market, sell it, etc., etc. They had done a lot of building and selling a property. Building houses and selling property and so on. And so I end up in process of time selling this property that I bought for $3,000 to the neighbor, and I paid all the closing fees, which amounted to around $500. So I have the property for 2 or 3 years, paid taxes on it for 2 or 3 years, sold it for about $500 less than I paid for it, minus the taxes I paid. I come out behind on that and take the money that I got from my property and I invested it into vitamins for the store. It was the first line of vitamins we brought into the Golden Harvest. And I said, well, it doesn't really matter at this point. I wasn't upset at all about the deal. I just was glad to be rid of it and thought, you know, it was a mistake. I never should have bought it, but it's gone now. And here I got this chunk of money. I can invest into vitamins in the store. And in a couple of years of selling vitamins, I will have re-earned anything that I lost on the sale of this property. But when my boss heard that I sold the property, I just kind of, you know, said it was just kind of a bad deal. I shouldn't have ever bought it. And so I sold it, lost a little money on it. And he was like, no, 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 no. It wasn't a bad idea to buy the property. It was a good piece of property. It was a bad idea to sell the property for what you sold it for. All right. All right. All right. Now, the story continues. Years later, that first $3,000 that he got out of that piece of property that went into extra inventory at Golden Harvest has turned over now, 12 years later, has turned over probably 150 times. How much do you think I made on that $3,000 in the last 12 years? I sold that piece of property over and over and over and over and over and over and over again for $6,000 now. All right. Now, this man ends up, his business ends up shutting down. Okay. Remember the principle we're talking about. There is that withholdeth more than his meat, but tempteth poverty. Okay. So, why is he struggling in business? He ends up not having enough work to keep me and his brother going through the winter, so he lays us off. So at that point, I quit and go to work at my own store, which is running at the time. And about a year later than that, he folds the whole business up and quits and goes and joins in with a national park to become the head, whatever, something at a he was working at a national park. He puts his house up for sale. Has trouble selling it. He puts his business property up for sale. Nice piece of property with a log office and workshop on the highway. A couple of barns, outbuildings, and so on. Nice piece of property, but he wants what it's worth. Okay, so he tries to sell it for about 10 years. And after he gets disgruntled moving around the country 2 or 3 times from here to Arizona working at national parks, he moves back to Rhinelander, decides he can't sell his piece of property So he's going to renovate it and turn it into a house and live there. All right. Now let me tell you what I think about that. I think it was pathetic. I think it was pathetic. So we've got this building now, sitting right on the highway, without a tree on the property, a couple of slightly ugly outbuildings, tons and tons and tons of highway noise, a building that was built without any intention of it ever being used for a house. And so now it's finished inside beautifully, because he's an excellent, excellent builder. It's finished inside absolutely beautifully, but it's just not really the kind of a thing that I would want to live in. The rooms are a little bit undersized, and it's just not so nice. And the fact of the matter is, he was trying to sell it for close to $300,000. And so now he's got this piece of property that was worth about $300,000, plus he invested into it probably another $50,000, turning it into a house. So now he's got this piece of property that's worth over over $300,000 to him, in his mind, and actually it's probably valued at about $150,000. That's probably about what it's worth, as far as what he could get for it right now, with property values the way they are. And the fact of the matter is, if he had taken that piece of property 10 years ago, sold it for $150,000, he would have saved 10 years of taxes. $150,000 plus, let's say, $2,000 a year, another $20,000, $170,000 to the good. You can go anywhere in Rhinelander and buy yourself a very nice house that is very desirable, without all the major traffic noise on the highway, without the ugly property, without the ugly neighbors, and you'd be at exactly the same place, money-wise, as you are right now, only you'd be a lot happier. But he couldn't do that, because you don't sell something for less than it's worth. It's a loss. In business, we don't take losses. That doesn't add up to profit. You see? But actually, what I'm telling you tonight is the exact opposite of that philosophy. You don't run a business without loss. And don't you ever expect to live life without loss. And if you want profit, you better expect to have loss with that profit. Because the two go together, and the one promotes the other. And being free-spirited with the things that you own, and not worrying about money, and not worrying about financial loss, puts a smile on your face and makes you happy, makes you get along with people. You don't yell and scream at people who don't do things the way you thought they should have done. You don't get angry at people who did things different than you would have done them. You just relax. Relax. Okay, so it doesn't matter. So now, one of my employees just cost me $300. I'm kidding now. I'm making up a story. You say, one of my employees just cost me $300, and it just doesn't matter. One time recently, I think it was just last spring, I was trying to move some fountains with a forklift. They were all stacked very nicely on a 4x8 or a 3x8 little table thing that we use for flowers. And I was very gently moving them with the forklift. But it happened to be spring. And all of a sudden, my forklift tire decided it wanted to go down in a soft spot. And we tipped a little bit. And guess what happened when we tipped? I just lost one piece. That's it. Just one of my pieces that was stacked nicely on this little thing decided to fall off. But when it fell, the whole thing was off-balanced. And it tipped the other way, and everything went. And in one click, I lost $1,500. Now, you know what I would do if one of my employees had done that? I'd yell and scream and shout and holler. No, I wouldn't, because I don't care. Because I found years and years and years and years ago that business is built on profit and loss. And the way you make money is to have a little bit more profit than loss. All right? It's a fact of life. Things never go perfectly for anybody. If anybody else had been there in that situation that day, they probably would have tipped the forklift over and gotten their leg broke too. You know, it was just, I mean, I'm good at it because, so, I'm just kidding. I think that I have probably been the chief executive loser at our business. I don't think any of my employees have ever come close to the losses that I have created for the store. Though some of my employees have done things that have cost me some money, I think I've been the chief. One time I bought peaches, brought them home, unloaded them off the truck, parked them by the cooler. They couldn't go in the cooler because it was full. But peaches don't have to be refrigerated. The next morning I came into work, I opened the boxes, I looked at them, I hauled the whole thing out to the dumpster and I threw them away, $300. You know what I would have done if I was a Mennonite bulk food store? I would have sold them and wrecked my reputation for produce. That's what I would have done. Now, at Golden Harvest, the number one selling item that we have in the store, probably nearly one quarter of all of our sales is produce. Why? Because we're not afraid to lose. If it's not good, it goes in the garbage. So that's that verse now. Wherever the tree falls is where the tree fell. Get over it. It's there. If you lost something, if the tree fell the wrong direction, if you didn't like what happened, get over it. Because dwelling on the place that the tree fell will do you no good at all. It's done. It happened. Now go on. The next verse is very similar. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the cloud shall not reap. Okay, now we're worrying not about what did happen, but what's going to happen. And we're looking at our surroundings to try to figure out what we should or shouldn't do. Solomon says, if you're going to farm, don't check the wind when you go out in the morning. And don't look at the clouds, because you got to get the job done. Don't worry about what's going to happen. It's as stupid to worry about what's coming as it is to ponder over what came. If what's coming comes, it's going to one day be in that category of what came. And what came can't be changed. Whatever came, came. If it rained on your harvest, it rained on your harvest. Not starting the harvest doesn't prevent the rain. Just get to work. As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God, who maketh all. In other words, you don't know what's coming. You don't know what God is going to give you today. Just the same way you don't know what's happening inside your belly if you're pregnant. You don't know how the baby is growing. Just that much, you don't know what God is sending you today. If a girl waited to get pregnant until she could sit there and in her mind form that little baby and make those bones grow, put some little hairs on its head, I want black hair today. Little teeny nose, it's going to have little teeny boogers in it. little teeny toes. If you had to wait to get pregnant until you could figure all that out, you ain't never going to have kids. But it's the same way, we don't know what life is going to shoot at us tomorrow. So just don't worry about it. Go get it done. So in the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand, for thou knowest not whether shall prosper, either this or that, or whether they shall both be good alike. Both be alike good. You don't know when you go to work tomorrow if everything you do is going to be successful. But you know one thing for certain, that not everything you do for the rest of your life is going to be successful. There's going to be failures. You're going to do something that's going to be a mistake. You're going to do something that's going to cost you money. You're going to do something that would have been better undone. You're going to do that, so don't worry about it. Go get the job done, is what he's saying. Don't worry about whether it's morning. Don't worry about whether it's evening. Don't worry about where the wind is from. Don't worry about what the clouds look like. Just go sow your seed. Now I want you to notice, on the spiritual side of what this is talking about, because in essence, we need to settle tonight what is success in life. Back in verse 1, it says, cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. If you think that it is coincidental that Solomon happened to be talking about bread in this passage where he's talking about success, if you think it is coincidental, let's find out if maybe the rest of the scripture carries this idea out. We already read in Proverbs chapter 11. What was Proverbs chapter 11 talking about? There is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than his meat, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him, but blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. Very simply, we're talking here about food. If the success of you having enough bread in your life, enough to eat, the subject here is food. The person who is liberal with food, the person who is always looking out what they can do for somebody else, that person will always have plenty. So in Proverbs chapter 11, we're talking about bread. In Ecclesiastes chapter 11, we are talking about bread. If we go to the New Testament and we turn to John chapter 12, John chapter 12, verse 24 says, verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. What was Jesus talking about when he said these words? Except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He was talking very simply about the death, that he himself was going to die on the cross. He says in verse 23, it says, Jesus answered them, saying, the hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Jesus is about to die. He is about to be crucified for the sins of the people. And he says, it's good that this should happen, because if I don't die, there's no harvest. The corn of wheat, grain, that is the word corn here in the King James is grain, all right? The old meaning of the word corn is grain. So we could say, except a grain of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. Now you all have seen wheat, you know what it looks like. If you hold a piece of wheat in your hand and say, this is good food, I can grind this into flour, I can bake bread out of it, I can eat it, and my toast and jam will be delicious. As long as you hold on to that piece of grain, that's all it's ever going to be, is a piece of grain. But if you plant that piece of grain into the ground, you lose it. It's gone. It's done. It's over. You'll never see it again. You'll never have the privilege of eating it. But up from that piece of grain comes a stalk. And on the head of that stalk are many, many more little pieces of grain. So we have this principle here of loss before gain. You have to put something out before you get something back. You have to give before you get. You have to sacrifice before you reap. And Jesus here is talking about his own death on the cross when he's talking about this. But what does Jesus say about himself? In John chapter 6, what did Jesus call himself? Verse 48, I am the bread of life. I am that bread of life. Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which cometh down from heaven, that a man may eat thereof and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world. The Jews therefore strove among themselves, saying, how can this man give us his flesh to eat? Then Jesus said unto them, verily, verily, I say unto you, except ye eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, ye have no life in you. Whoso eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood hath eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day. For my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. Far enough. What are we talking about in the New Testament when we're talking about except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone? Bread. All right, let me tell you what I believe is the only thing that is true success in life. When you, as a human being, are living for the feeding of the world, that's success. When you are living, turned in, looking at yourself, trying to find your own ends in life, trying to find happiness, pursuing the things that you think will be good for you, you may go out and become a multi-billionaire if you want. And if you did not find the joy of giving to other people and of getting the love that comes in return when you are a giving person, if you didn't find that joy, you are the unhappiest person that ever walked the earth. You didn't get anything. You may have gotten money, but your life was unsuccessful as a life. Giving is when your life becomes bread for the world. We're basing this on a physical reality, but this is just so, exactly that way in the spiritual truth. Where we work under Christ as preachers of the gospel to bring the world to Him. The healing of the world, the bread that we feed, the bread that we have, the Christ that we have to preach, that we are taking to the world, consists of the same principle to ourselves as it consisted in the life of Christ when he said, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. And every single person who is sitting in this room tonight, if you do not apply that principle to your life, if you are not willing to lose everything that you have in life, if you are not willing to give it up, if you are not willing to hand it out to the multitudes of the people on earth, dispense with it to feed them, you will not bear fruit. You will abide alone. That is success. That is the only success. It is the only success that has any value to it. It is the only success that has the possibility of making you happy. It is the only success that has the possibility of giving you eternal life. Because it is the call of God on you. So when we look at this success, we have to be willing to look at our meager stock of corn. We have to be willing to look at our meager stock in life. And we have to be willing to just get rid of it. Let it go. Be done with saving for ourselves. It is then that we understand the verse, "Cast thy bread upon the waters. After many days, it will return to you." Hindrances to success are when we walk into our barn and we look at what we have and it is not enough for ourselves. And we hoard. We say, "What I have here is not enough. I'm going to have to be careful with it. I got to make sure that I don't let my heart go out to any neighbors or anybody who might need my help. I have to hold on to this because I don't have enough." We withhold more than is meet, and it tends to poverty. That fear, that attitude can be based on selfishness. I want, I need, this is mine. It can be based on fear. If I get rid of this, what am I going to do tomorrow? How am I going to take care of myself? I married a woman. I'm sorry for calling you a woman, Nikki. I married a girl, a very hot girl, that really enjoys giving. And I thought I was a giving person myself. Till I feel all these times like, "Nikki, stop, 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 stop. We're going to go bankrupt here if you don't quit giving my stuff away." But you know what the Bible says about that? "When thou doest thine alms, let not thy right hand know what thy left hand doeth." Now, if me and Nikki are one flesh, one of us is the right hand and one of us is the left. And I have a suspicion I'm the left. And I have had to break with this stinking, rotten, selfish attitude and just let her do what she's supposed to do. Because hoarding doesn't help me. And it's all so worked up in the attitude. And I'm sorry, it's in the business world. My irritation in the business world is extreme. Everywhere I go, I am irritated constantly. You sleep at a motel and you wonder why you paid $98 for your hotel room. And they profess to serve a hot breakfast in the morning, but it is frozen, reheated bacon and eggs and bread that the food pantry couldn't give away. And you say, you know, if this store would have just, if this restaurant would have gone to a place like Golden Harvest and had gotten fresh eggs and made and fresh bacon and bought bread, it could not have cost them more than $5 to feed me and my wife this morning. And we paid $98 for our hotel room. Why are we getting served food like this? Let me tell you why we were. Because $5 is too much. That's where the Bible says there is that withholdeth more than is meat, but it tendeth to poverty. We don't have the bathroom issue up here so bad as you get it in the South. The moment you travel in the South, nobody has bathrooms. And what's a person supposed to do? go out behind a train car. We've done that on trips before. Nobody has bathrooms. How can you be a gas station, the only one in 80 miles on the freeway in California, and there's no bathrooms? What's a person supposed to do? You know how much money it costs to pay for the water and the toilet paper that somebody needs to use the bathroom at your place? Just quit being so stingy. Do something for your customers. I've seen people many times refuse to sell things that they had because they knew its value. I have cows to sell today, but the market is so poor, I ain't selling my cows for so much money. I'll keep them. And for the next year and a half, the market drops a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And now the cows are past the prime age that you want to sell them at, and it's time to go out of business. This doesn't make sense anymore. And so you take your over-aged cows to the market when it's at its all-time low, and you get way less for them than you would have gotten a year and a half ago, and you wouldn't have had to spend the feed for a year and a half to feed them, but you were too stingy to take them to the market at the price that you would have gotten when it was time to take them. You were too stingy because it was not going to pay you what you thought they were worth. Makes good business sense, doesn't it? And you take a loss. You take a loss because you're stingy. You know what your stuff is worth? It's worth what somebody is offering to pay you, and you better get rid of it. That's how much it's worth. You say, well, I raised these cows, and I have $500 into them. I don't know what cows are worth, okay. I have $500 into them. And today on the market, I'm only going to get $400 for them. How can you stay in business like that? That's a $100 loss. All right? That's when the tree fell and you couldn't control it. Get rid of the cows. Just get rid of the cows. The next cows you raise, you'll make a profit on. And if indeed you can't make a profit selling cows, you might want to think about having something else on your farm. But quit complaining. There's no point. There's no point in making an issue about what somebody is going to pay you for your stuff. Sell it. Because withholding never works. It always tends to poverty. Success consists of feeding and in turn being fed. And it consists of failure, loss, and accomplishment. When you cast your bread upon the waters because it's going to return to you after many days, the theory is now, throughout the bread, it's coming back. But you know that bread you throw out, you will never see it again. In the reality of life, that bread that you throw out there on the waters will not come back to you. It's some other bread from some other source at some other time that comes back to you. But let's say for a moment, well, I'm not casting my bread upon the waters then because the risk is too great. The ducks are going to eat it. So let's put our 100 loaves of bread on the shelf and save it for a year. How good will your bread be in a year? Fit only to feed to your relatives. You don't gain. You gotta let go of the things of life if you want to be successful. Nobody ever gets the attitude of success being a worrier or being selfish. Let go, let go, let go, let go. Don't worry about money. Don't worry about things. Don't worry about your time. Don't worry about your losses. Don't worry about it. Just keep living. When you work hard and you don't worry about the bad things that happen, and they're going to happen, you eventually end up in the end, you get enough out of life to live on. And you're happy besides. That's what success is. Let's dismiss.